All right, now for our main speaker tonight is Jillian from Arroyo Grande.
My name is Jillian, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Jillian.
Just moved to Arroyo Grande. It feels weird. My sobriety date is 11-7-11. That's 10, so that's out of the way. 10 years. And I still claim the Ghost at Any Lengths group as my home group in Santa Maria because I don't know about you guys, but I don't really like change. I don't do very well with change, and I'm trying to. This thing is stressing me out. Like, I can see it timing. Will it? And so, like, finding a new group is a little stressful for me because I have a crew of people right now that I feel comfortable with, I feel confident in, I trust them, I have shown them my good and my worst, and so leaving them and trying to find a new group is kind of hard, but you got to do it. And thank you, David, for doing this because you just shaved off 10 minutes. I love it because I prayed beforehand. I'm all over the place. You know, I do a roller coaster. I had prayed beforehand just to try to say something helpful because I bounce all over. I cannot do this linearly. Like, I was born here, and then this is how I grew up, and then I got drunk, and then it got bad, and then I found AA, and now my life is, like, amazing and perfect. I can't do it. So you're going to get all kinds of stuff. So, for instance, I was at an Easter event last weekend, up in AG at this woman from the gym invited me, and we just know each other and workout stuff, like, you know, but she's, lives up on a hill with these fancy AG people, and we were there having a good old time, and like, the kids are playing, and they're doing the Easter egg hunt, we're playing cornhole, and like, the sun is shining, and I'm drinking fizzy water with these beautiful, lovely people, and it was, like, great. And then all of a sudden, I was like, these people all drive, like, Teslas and BMWs and stuff. And these people have, like, really expensive watches on them. I don't even know what that is, but that's expensive. And I'm like, these people are talking about being at Coachella. And all of a sudden, I was like, what am I doing here? You know, what am I doing here? Or do they think less of me? You know, I started, like, emotionally just kind of getting kind of small, you know, and they didn't do it to me. I was having a good old time. I was playing cornhole. I played decent. They were having a good time. Nobody was mean to me. Nobody judged me that I know of. Everybody was very friendly. I did that myself. And sometimes I do that. Because I'm a human, and just because I'm sober, or just because I work a program, or just because I, you know, work with my sponsor, it doesn't mean all of a sudden I, like, don't do that stuff, because I do. The point is, though, that then I can see it, I can recognize it, be like, well, here's my dusty old Ford Focus, like, you know, no biggie, and move on and have a good time and shake it off and just kind of see it and set it aside. So grateful for that. That's Alcoholics Anonymous, because in the past, if I were drunk or if I were not healthy in recovery, because that's just as possible, I would shrink down, you know, live in that small space, make an excuse to leave, find some reason to resent them or hold it against them, their more affluent lifestyle or whatever. Or just kind of get all up in my head and just go crazy. And I just don't want to be that person. I don't want to live up there. I don't want to not live in the moment, enjoying the Easter egg hunt and playing cornhole. But it's that apartness, that separateness that can just sort of like a haze, you know, like the San Maria fog, just kind of like sneaking in. I don't see it. I don't feel it at first. I don't know what's happening. Until all of a sudden it's there and it can kind of scare me. Another story. At the building where I work, we've been having a problem with some homelessness. There's been a guy, there's like a little nook outside our building where somebody homeless has been kind of camping out every night, because every morning we come in and there's like a, you know, pad and stuff and like food and blankets and stuff. Every day it's like different stuff. Apparently he's sort of creative, gets new stuff every day. We have to come in and clean it up, but it's sad. You know, every morning I go to work and like, it's sad. You see the remnants of this person basically living there every night. And they've been working on it and they've been trying to clean it up and everything. And by the time I got there to work yesterday, the stuff was gone. And on the ground is a 17-year AA chip. And, you know, I'm assuming it was this person's, I don't know. But that, you know, maybe it's not, maybe it's a coincidence, maybe somebody in the building, I don't know. But I don't have any way of finding out. And I left it in case the person missed it. But I went back today before the meeting and it was still there. So I have it now. I don't know why. I don't know why. But I think in a way, for me, it just kind of was a way of looking at like what is an option. Anyway. My story is a little unconventional, I think, because I started drinking so late in life. And I would say for anybody who's maybe new, at least, that if you hear something that resonates with you, great. If none of my story resonates with any of you, don't worry about it. Just keep listening to other people, because someone will have your story and someone will say exactly what you need to hear, and they will say exactly what you're feeling. And if it's not me, it'll be somebody else. Don't worry. We talk a lot. We like to hear ourselves talk, so you'll hear it. But, you know, I started drinking really late. I was an only child. I grew up, you know, spending most of my time with adults. So I was a very mature young woman, you know, and was very proud of the fact that I could handle myself in environments with grown-ups all the time, and so I did. But it also led me to feel different then. So I didn't fit in, I didn't have the close-knit friends, I didn't play sports, I didn't have a community, I didn't have people. I had Jillian, and I studied to be a dancer most of my life and lived in the arts, and that was another thing that kind of set me apart. I am different than, and I am better than all of you. Better than all of the other kids, better than anybody, really. So that was great, you know, feeding that sense of superiority and developing that egomaniac with an inferiority complex, because simultaneously I was also not taking part in what everybody was doing. Whether it was, you know, the kids going to parties or the kids playing sports or, you know, the high schoolers doing the dances, you know. I would say, I don't want to, I'm better than, I'm going to go to the opera. But really what I saw was everybody else going to a dance and they're having fun. Living those two worlds. And I never saw my parents drink, so I wasn't raised in an environment with alcohol around or with people drinking. And so I didn't see it. And it's not that I didn't know it. I did know that alcoholism ran in my family. So that was one more reason to avoid the parties. I don't drink because I have alcoholism in my family. And so I just, you know, that separateness, that partness, that feeling of the Easter party, I don't belong. You know, they think less of me, they're judging me, I'm different, I'm separate, and living my whole life that way. I moved around, I left here for high school and lived in Louisville, Kentucky for high school. And then I was in Pittsburgh for a hot minute, and then I came back here.
And then I ended up in New York City, discovered I didn't have what it took to become a dancer, ended up in North Carolina. So always apart, always better than, always staying separate, always doing my own thing. And then when I was in North Carolina, I discovered alcohol. So I remember that moment when I was at a bar, and I remember that moment, so I'm 21, and I had a few drinks here and there, but I was 21, and somebody handed me drinks and shots, and I finally just went for it. And all of a sudden, I was good. I was having fun. I wasn't thinking about myself. I didn't feel apart. I didn't feel separate. I didn't feel isolated. I was just having fun, and it was amazing. And so I just kind of went from there. You know, I was 21. I was living in North Carolina. Didn't really have any responsibilities. Didn't really know what I was doing. I was sort of in school, sort of not, whatever. But all of a sudden, alcohol became like the most fun for me. So I would go out partying and drinking, and that was the only way that I knew how to function comfortably, and to be easy in my own skin and not feel like people were judging me. So I partied. I just became a party girl. And lots of people do that, and whatever. That doesn't make you an alcoholic. It just made me, you know, party person, crazy and stupid. But I liked living sort of on the edge. I liked keeping a day job, wearing a skirt and heels, so proud of the fact that I was going out and getting so jacked up at night on alcohol or pills or coke or whatever. And so proud of that, like, wild child life. While I was out, I was so proud of the daytime, like, skirt and heels, like, glasses life. Literally, like, living two lives. Not knowing who I was in either one. Neither one was really me. Both of them were kind of a show. Because I was that uncomfortable. And I even remember, like, I remember one of the girls I would party with, Ella, we were tight. I would stay up all night. So I would stay up all night and then, like, use drugs to keep me up all night. And then, like, run to the gym in the morning. So I stayed up all night and then run to the gym in the morning and, like, work out all kind of, like, jacked up. And then, like, run home and then crash. And she and I said, you know what? How about next weekend we don't like drink. Like, next weekend we won't drink. We'll just take it easy and, like, hang out. I even remember thinking, I don't think I really like you. I don't want to. I don't really want to hang out with you. Like, granted, you know, we're hanging out every night, drinking, going to the bars and people's houses and, you know, shows and stuff. But the idea of just hanging out with her without all of that was just, you know, like, gross to me. You know, and eventually I got through school, and I just, you know, I just kind of kept that up because I was so uncomfortable and didn't know how to exist. And, you know, I made it through school and had regular jobs, and I worked in sports with young athletes in high school, and behave really inappropriately. I just, you know, with either alcohol or drugs or money or men or women, didn't care. You know, I always needed something to make me feel better, to make me feel worthy or special or unique somehow, and just feel easy. And I remember one time in, like, sixth grade or something, we went on a field trip, I think it was to Montana de Oro, and we went on a little walk on the trails, and they sent us all out into the woods, and said, everybody go spread out, go into the woods and find a tree, go sit under a tree for like 15 minutes. And for some reason, I don't know why, I remember this. I remember finding my tree and I sat under it. And I remember just having a sense of peace. I wasn't raised with religion or a god or anything like that, but I just remember kind of sitting there, leaning up against my tree, doing my sixth grade thing, under the eucalyptus, and just feeling at peace. And so here I am, you know, 20, 30 years later, living my wild life, drinking and drugging because I just can't, I can't exist. You know when you get a sunburn and you're like hot, but you're like cold at the same time? That's how I felt just in life, just like, you know, and having to use that alcohol to feel better. And I ended up working in a high school, making some sketchy choices. And one of the football coaches that I worked for was a sober man who, you know, could just kind of watch me from a distance and knew I was drinking pretty heavy, but he was, you know, sober alcoholic, so he knew the signs. And finally one day he's like, how's that working for you, darling? It's like, I'm good, fine, you know, until I do some things that probably would have been deemed very illegal and very immoral. And at some point, by the way, it did help that he was an older, very attractive football coach. Like, that always helps. Like, if it had been a, you know, like, old lady or something, I might have probably not listened. But this is where our character defects, like, God leaves us with the character defects that we need, frankly. I was at a coffee shop with him. Woman in a relationship, man in a marriage, still probably a little sketchy, but I could rationalize it because we were talking serious stuff. And he had the little 24-hour-a-day book, which he kept in his truck. And so this was November 6th. And here's the reading for November 6th. He had just basically saved me from doing some really immoral, illegal stuff that I could somewhat remember with teenage football players. So here's November 6th. Fear and worry had me down. Jillian's crying in a coffee shop parking lot, okay? Fear and worry had me down. They were increased by my drinking. I worried about what I had done when I was drunk. I was afraid of what the consequences might be. I was afraid to face people because of the fear of being found out. Fear kept me in hot water all the time. I was a nervous wreck from fear and worry. I was a tied up bundle of nerves. I had a fear of failure, of the future, of growing old, a sickness, of a hangover, of suicide. It went on. And it's neither here nor there at this point. Like, yeah, we get it, fear. But at that moment on that day, November 6th, that hit me hard and it hurt because I had been so sick from all of my behavior and from not being able to just be at peace in the world. So, November 6th. November 7th, walked my little butt into an AA room. I did that because 30 years earlier, my mother had gotten sober here. Literally here. And I sat in meetings with her as a 10-year-old, as a kid. And so I heard all of this. So this is part of why when I say I work with newcomers, sometimes I have a hard time relating because I knew walking in the rooms what a sponsor was. I knew I would have to quit drinking for good and all, as Dr. Bob says. I knew I'd have to work the steps. I knew that. So I walked my happy butt into a meeting room and raised both hands. I sat in the middle, by the way, I didn't want to be in the front. I didn't want to be in the back. I sat like in the middle because I wanted to be just sort of like anonymous. In the middle, raised both my hands and said, my name is Jillian. I'm pretty sure I'm an alcoholic. And then my life got real shitty. Yeah. Because, you know, that discomfort, that irritation, that fear, that the fear and worry, like, I still had the fear and worry. The fear and worry was almost worse without the drinking. Like, just having to go to work, just having to exist every single day. I didn't know how. My sponsor says, go have coffee with a woman. I'm like, I don't know how. I had to Google, like, topics, topics for having conversation with a woman. I didn't know how, and it was that uncomfortable. I knew how to sort of put on a costume, put on the show, you know, living two lives of how to pretend like a person having coffee, basically. That's what I knew, but it was so uncomfortable. And like many people, I didn't get into the steps. I didn't really do it. I didn't give in. I just was here and not drinking, which is so yucky. So yucky. At 9 months in, I'm ready to just like throw in the towel. I'm crying myself to sleep at night. I'm sleeping with my baby blanket and my stuffed Hippo Joe. My stuffed animal, Hippo Joe. So I'm 32 years old, crying myself to sleep, sleeping with a baby blanket because I hadn't really worked the steps and it was so painful. And it finally was at that point that I picked up the phone. I didn't have the power to do it before that. I picked up the phone. I called one of the people who had been all exuberant about all these events going on in the meetings, and I'm like, God, why don't they shut up about all these problems? And this was kind of a big area, so they did lots of like, you know, Nikki Paw and Circuit Paw and, you know, the Icky Paw and like all of the WPAWs, the, you know, AA, like young people stuff, that they would like come to the meetings and announce with like sing songs and beach balls, and I'm like, shut the fuck up. Enough already. But at 9 months, I was in so much pain, I called one of those knuckleheads. And I was like, do you guys need any help with the thing? And they were like, yeah, we do. Actually, you know, there's this stuff going on and come on. And I was like, God, no, shit. But it was like that point, like tiptoeing, you know? Okay, come on in, just a little bit. That willingness that the book talks about, just a little bit of willingness to do something different. And you know what was even worse was this, you know, the guy who was in charge of all these events and everything, he was like, okay, you know, he's been sober like a year. So they just took away my license and I have to go do weekends at jail. But there's this like, you know, sober event party going on, you should go. And I was like, ooh, without you? Wait, all by myself? I don't know any of these people? Oh, God. So I did. You know, just that willy, tiptoeing, like little stuff, uncomfortable. Going to the Easter party last weekend. I don't know any of these people. I don't know any of them. What are they gonna be like? Are they gonna like me? Are they gonna, I don't know. Go. That's what I do, you know, the Alcoholics Anonymous, that's what you guys teach me. That's what the sponsors teach me. Go do it anyway. It doesn't matter that it's uncomfortable. It doesn't matter what your feelings are about it. So that's what I started doing, just a little bit. And I started getting more active, and I started, like, hanging out a little bit and actually going to coffee and being part of the events and then, you know, starting to feel better. You know, and sometime after that, I finally get to a legitimate step three with my sponsor. The old lady who just had spine surgery and had a brace on. I think I told you guys about it. And then we're, you know, she's like, okay, we're going to go into the bedroom and kneel down at the bed, the doily cover mattress. That's what I remember. Like, it had like doilies and stuff on it. And I'm like, okay, all right. You know, we're gonna go in the grandma's bedroom and pray. But, you know, we did. I did what I was told. We knelt down and we said the third step prayer together. And I felt that peace, like under the eucalyptus tree. And it felt good. And I felt safe. And I came out of there and called all of my other, like, you know, AA friends who were on the same time of sobriety. And I was like, guys, have you done this? Like, this is amazing. Yeah, it's so great. It's like, hi. And I wanted more. And I got more active and I did some service and started working like with the recovery houses and you know, my journey is not like everybody's else's. Well, I can't even say that. My journey is my own journey. Some people come in, they get a sponsor, they work together and they're with each other for a long time until their sponsor passes on or whatever. Mine's not like that. I've moved around a lot. I've had a number of sponsors. I've been very active in AA. I have been very inactive in AA. And because I moved, I came across my box with my chips in it recently. And so I was looking at it. Like, I have one and two. And I have my mom's one, which is kind of cool for me because she has 30-something years now. So I have one and two, three. I gave to one of my sponsees when she got her 3 years. I don't think I have a four. I think I have a five. I do not have a six. I do not have a seven because Jillian kind of like backed out a little bit for a while. My eight is actually a 13 because instead of the VIII, they gave me the XIII. But I didn't want to, like, it just, I didn't realize it, and then I was like, screw it, whatever. You know? So, like, it was just interesting looking at them as a whole, like, kind of thinking about where I was living at the time and whether I was active at the time, because I have backed out. I have very much removed myself, not consciously, and that's the whole point here, like the fog, you know? You don't really see it arrive. You don't really see it leave. But I was not active. And I was not actively working steps. And I've lived in places where I just, like, couldn't connect. And I don't know whether any of that was the environment or if it was all me. I don't know. But I have felt disconnected. And, like, I couldn't really open my heart to you guys. And that's been a bad place for me. And what happens with me if I am not connected, not working steps, not attached to my higher power, not praying, basically not doing any of it, is I will be damned if I go out and get a drink. Like, this is how stubborn I am. Fuck you. I will not drink. But I know where my pistol is. And I know how to kill myself. That's what I'll do. Like, I have pretty actively made some plans while sober, you know, white knuckling it, you know, with several years, and not proud of that, but I would rather share that because that's me. That's me. That's Jillian. I can't recall specific events that helped me come out of the darker periods like that, but it did. And I can very clearly see that it relates directly to my attachment with my higher power and prayer and the program and how much of it I didn't have at that time. So I am
you know, the third step talks about turning our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understand Him. Whatever that needs to be for you, God, Spirit of the Universe, Great Universal Spirit is one I hear a lot, Sky Chief, you know, Gus, like, you know, Lady of the Woods, whatever. Mine takes on different names sometimes, just depending on what kind of mood I'm in or what kind of what kind of love I feel like I need. And I've gone through a particularly difficult time here recently. I would say that this is the most difficult time that I've been through in sobriety. And I've been fortunate to be in an environment where I feel comfortable enough to really share my heart. Thank goodness. And during this time, I have cried a lot. I have been afraid. I've been worried. I've been really freaking pissed off, you know, resentful at other humans that I'm related to. But I have prayed regularly, like on my knees kind of prayer. I have been doing my meetings. I have been talking to my sponsor. I have been meditating and sharing where I am. And despite crying and being upset and fearful and worried, I am safe. And that's what I want. Because I don't think that going through difficult times means like, oh, I'm just gonna be good. You know, like that's not what's gonna happen. Like, oh, you're gonna go through a really hard time, but you're sober. So it's just gonna be like, okay, cool, no problem. Like going to the bank. That's not what it means. It still means that I get to feel the feelings. It still means that I get to be really sad because this thing happened. I get to bawl my eyes out and be sad and lonely and disappointed. Because I get to feel the whole spectrum of feelings. And I also get to feel excited and elated and hopeful. I get to feel all of them. Only because I'm doing that prayer and that meditation. So in the midst of all of this swirling around, like what's gonna happen in life? And where am I gonna go? What's gonna happen? Why am I living in a Arroyo Grande of all places? Like what is happening? I feel safe. I never had a desire to drink, never had, you know, a desire to use. That doesn't occur to me. And I feel lucky. You know? I can see, just like when I said, like I was at the Easter party and I recognized like, oh, Jillian, you're isolating yourself. They didn't do that to you. That was your own little demons doing it. Just like that, I get to say, You're in the barrel. It's gonna pass and it's gonna be okay. So my journey, it's all over the place. I don't know what I'm doing in Arroyo Grande. I don't know. I don't know. They don't do the meetings the same there. But gas is expensive, so I'm not driving down here every day. You know, but anyway, like, I'm not, you know, like, I can't not go to meetings because I don't feel a part of yet. I just told you what happens when I isolate myself from you guys. I just told you. So I can't isolate myself. Maybe I needed it there. Maybe that's what it is. My ego likes to think that. They need me. Yeah, I don't know. It doesn't matter.
I have to pray, just like I prayed before this meeting, like, dear God, please let me not be a hot mess. Please let me say something that's helpful. Please help me to say something that is of use to other people. I mean, I know for an hour I'll be sober. I've got a pretty good track record at this point. But, so, maybe, I don't know. But I just have to keep showing up in Arroyo Grande and Oceano and Pismo Beach. Stupid Zoom. I don't know, but that's my journey. It's all over the place. And I'm proud of it. I'm proud that I can stand here and say, okay, this is how my sobriety's been. Hot mess at times. But that's cool. And I feel loved by you guys. And I feel like, so I'm turning my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand Him. The care of God. Like, not like the tax collector. Like, okay, here's my taxes. Or like going to the bank. Like, you know, doing a transaction. Not like going to the dentist to take care of my teeth. Like the care of God. And sometimes I need the care of God. I need to feel hugged and loved and safe, you know, some people just have really good hugs, you know, like, you know, I need my life to feel that way. I think it smells good there. There's good air fresheners. It's warm. It's like those blankets in the store that you can't, you walk by and you like rub it. It feels so soft. This is how my mind thinks. My mind has those really soft, fuzzy blankets. It smells good. It's warm. It's a spa. It's a spa, apparently.
Nice.
I don't know, but sometimes that's the God that I need. Sometimes, like right now, I'm doing these jiu-jitsu classes. Ugh. Why? I don't know. I don't know. Because I'm going through a divorce and need something to keep me busy and it's good for me and it scares me so bad. Every day of the week I show up and I step on the mat and I'm the newest person there and I'm scared and I hate feeling stupid and I feel less than. And I feel like an idiot, and I feel lost and confused and frustrated. And every day, the people with some time who are very nice and very friendly, much like you people, and very welcoming, they say, that's all right, G, keep coming back. So at 10 years, that's what I do. You know, I seek out other opportunities to learn and grow. And with some of them, you know, I feel strong enough to be able to say that to them. Like, I'm so frustrated and I want to know more. And they just, I swear to God, they're just like you guys, only even more vulgar. They say, like, Jillian, you just got here. You don't get to know all of it right now. Jillian, it's a journey. And they get frustrated with me the same way my sponsors have. Like, Jillian, so? And I'm like, but. Or I'm doing something and the teacher's like, why are you so close? Or why are you so far away? Or why aren't you moving your hips? Or why aren't you doing that? And I want to be like, you told me to do it this way. Or how come I'm not learning this? Or how come this doesn't work? And they just look at me like, shut up. Jillian, just do it again. Just do it again. So that's my outlet right now. Besides the you guys and this, I could do martial arts. Because it keeps me very humble and it keeps me learning and I can see the growth that happens. And so I'm able to kind of take that into my regular life and learn those same kind of lessons. That it's important to remain teachable. And it's important when that new person walks on the mat and they're freaked out, that I can go to them and be like, hey, come over here. We stand over here at the beginning of class. Because they have that look in their eyes that I'm so familiar with. Like when people come in here, like, hey, come on in. Do you want some coffee? Practicing. It's just practice. Well, they get me in an audible. Last night, I worked with this woman. She's magical or something. I don't know. I could not knock her down. To save my life. I don't know why I couldn't. She knocked me down like 50 times. and I don't know how. And it's so frustrating. And I could look at that and be like really frustrated and angry and like pissed off and resentful. And like, what magic powers does she have? I don't know. How come they're not like imparting their ways to me? And so that I can walk out tonight and know it all. I don't know. It just means I got knocked down 50 times. Whatever. That's what I do. You get knocked down, you get up, and I do it again. Okay, do it again. Get knocked down. And I'm like, trying to learn. Over, over, over. I come into the meetings. I listen. I share. I do the steps. I talk to a sponsor. I work with sponsees when I have them. I do service work, showing up. Let me say this. I don't do all of that 100% all the time. But don't. Like, they take turns, you know what I mean? Like, sometimes more meetings, sometimes less meetings, sometimes more sponsees, sometimes more sponsees. Yeah. But do. They're all in the pot, you know what I mean? Work them. Whichever one is kind of like needing the most attention right now. Just keep doing it. And when I do that, I feel safe and I feel at peace. Well, I don't sit under the tree necessarily every day, but I can have that same feeling of, oh, it's okay. It's all good. You're all right. The care of God has me, and the care of Alcoholics Anonymous has me, as long as I'm doing it. Thanks for asking me.
Thank you. Yeah.
That was great. That was awesome.
Hey, let me take the 17 here.
Yeah. All right, let's give both of our speakers another round.